our characters. And so we've heard of this upcoming generation as the me generation, the selfie generation. So here we'll get a little bit into this. Social me, media, it always seems like it's always centering around me. Look at me, look at what I'm doing, look at how I'm acting. There is an interesting shift, cultural shift, in everybody's mind. Ecclesiastes 1:9 says this, "The thing that hath been, and that is, which shall be, and that which is done, is that which shall be done, and there is no new thing under the sun." I believe that whatever we struggle with in our world today, if you could look back through the history of time, every single generation has struggled with the same things. We have just changed the technological advancements that we interact with. But it's the same struggle. Our biggest struggle is against ourselves, right? So I find it really interesting that in the very end of the world, we have these devices that are making us selfish. I want to give you a couple of statistics as we start in, because this is kind of interesting. Social media is taking the world by storm. It is not going anywhere. It is growing at an incredible rate. There's about 7.5 billion people in the world, about 3.17 billion internet users, about 2.3 billion active social media users. There's almost as many social media users as people who actually use the internet. 91% of all of our brands use two or more social media accounts, and Facebook, Messenger, and WhatsApp handle 60 billion messages a day. These are incredible amounts of information. There is reports that are coming out in the news that say teens are beginning to spend 9 hours a day with media. Now, this isn't 9 hours a day playing with Facebook, 9 hours a day only on video games. This is all of this screen time, all of these different things together. So I'll play a little news clip from you from CNN here. There's audio on this one.
Video games, reading, scrolling around the internet. So it's all of that,
okay.
But it is 9 hours a day. And for teens, it's about 6.5 hours of their time on screens. So really what this report shows, Common Sense Media's founder says, it's like the digital transformation of childhood and adolescence is complete. They are now using screens and using media so much more than really maybe when we were kids.
I know for me, every morning, I always watch TV. When I'm doing my homework that maybe I'm a little bored of the topic, I have to listen to music to get motivated to do it.
See,
so kids in my generation have to do stuff like that. I don't speak for myself. And I know that I play video games with my friends, and I do that, I think, more than I actually get some sleep sometimes.
I know. That I was saying in my piece. Mom said 9 hours a day.
So 9 hours a day, people are playing with these screens and this media. I'm going to play a little clip for you of how people generally use social media. And maybe perhaps you'll see yourself in this. Maybe perhaps you know somebody that's like this. Here's a little clip of how people generally use social media.
I want to post about how great this coffee is, but I can't think of a funny way to say it.
This post is like a page long. How do I shorten this?
Just take out all the vowels.
No.
Seriously.
Dude, you gonna eat those or just take pictures?
He's the cutest baby on the internet.
Is this guy always on vacation?
Costa Rica vacay.
Did you just like my post about my uncle dying?
Office pic.
No.
Hold still. I'm vining you.
Why are you Instagramming lamps?
How did he get so many followers? He's a dentist.
Hey guys, you on Twitter? Follow me. We just got 2 retweets.
Sometimes I want to move to another country where I wouldn't have to deal with this stuff.
Is suffice para dizer que eu tô me achando?
Hashtag photo of the day.
Hashtag I quit. Just kidding.
Hashtag multitasking.
Hashtag squirmworm.
Hashtag road trip dudes.
Not while you're driving, man.
Hashtag yoloi.
Is anybody even gonna read this? Fasty.
Coffee friends. Mini bagels.
Sush. Unsubscribe.
What's up, Facebook?
Oh, look at my new shoes. Unfollow.
I love
coffee.
We're going viral.
I don't care about your dog. I don't care about your lunch.
Neil Archie.
Nobody cares about your tree pics.
Driving selfie.
Glaciers.
Desert.
Third world.
Nobody cares.
I'm gonna hide all of you.
Dude, I made the popular page.
So perhaps you've met somebody that's like that. I want to share something with you, though, that is very interesting when I look at my Bible and I look at the world around me. James 3:16 says, "For where there is envy and self-seeking, confusion and every evil thing are there." The Bible knows that when we become so self-centered, it allows evil to come into the world. And how do most people use social media? As you can see, it's like, look at a picture of me. Look at what I'm doing. Look at where I'm going. Look at what I'm up to. It's not how everyone uses it. It's generally how people use it. Jesus was not self-seeking at all. In fact, he himself said, "I seek not even my own will, but the will of my Father that has sent me." Luke 9:23 says, "If any man come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me." And Jesus, of course, when he was in the Garden of Gethsemane, his real test was this time that he was like, "You know what? Not as I will, God, as you will." Complete, utter selflessness is what Jesus was like. Always focused on other people. That's the God that we serve, and I find it really interesting that we, in the end of time, we have these devices that are beginning to get us to just look at ourselves and constantly focus on ourselves. Listen to this. This comes from the spirit of prophecy. Jesus had been earnestly conversing and instructing his disciples, but as he neared Gethsemane, he became strangely silent. His disciples were perplexed and anxiously regarded his countenance, hoping to read an explanation for the change that had come over him. They had frequently seen him depressed. Pause. Have you thought of Jesus like this? Have you thought of Jesus frequently depressed? That's an interesting thought. Because they have found that there is a link between social media use and depression. When you constantly see, wow, look at how much fun my friends are having. Look at the new shoes my friends bought. Wow, look at the vacations that they all go on. My life isn't as exciting as their life. And it's causing depression in our young people and many people. And here it's interesting to me that Jesus was frequently depressed. Brothers and sisters, if you've ever been depressed, it's a terrible thing. But know this, you serve a God that has experienced things that he can help you through them. Philippians 2, 3, and 4 say this, "Do nothing from rivalry or conceit, but in humility count others more significant than yourselves. Let each of you not look to his own interests, but also to the interests of others." The Bible is constantly reinforcing this idea of being selfless. And here we have a whole generation that is growing up taking many, many photos of themselves. I found this interesting. There are 600 million more people that own a mobile phone compared to those who own a toothbrush. People care more about technology than they do dental hygiene in the world. Isn't that interesting? The whole world seems to be obsessed with all of this media. Here's a little video clip that I found that was kind of interesting. What it's doing to our brains, is there a damage to it? Is it rewiring us in a negative way? The internet is a wonderful tool. You can learn things. It has all kinds of access to information. You can search Mrs. White's writings. You can search the Bible. Trust me, I don't want you to leave here hearing that the internet is a bad thing, but it has a negative effect on the way many of us use it. There's this little thing called our short-term memory. And the short-term memory has to transfer into the long-term memory. So here's a little example of what happens in between this transfer of short-term to long-term and what the internet is actually doing to us.
So you're reading an article online when you get an instant message with a link to a funny photo, which of course you have to share. And now you're reading your Facebook news wall, which sends you to a video of a panda bear attacking a kid. And now you're reading Wikipedia to learn everything you can about the violent behavior of panda bears. And this is what 3 minutes on the internet can be like. We live like this all the time, and it has to have some kind of effect on us.
The net is making us more superficial as thinkers.
That is Nicholas Carr. He is the author of The Shallows, What the Internet is Doing to Our Brains. To understand this whole thing better, we need to go way back in time, to say, like, the prehistoric age.
You wanted to know everything going on around you, because the more you knew about your surroundings, the less likely you were to get attacked by a predator. And there's even evidence that our brains release some dopamine, pleasure-producing neurotransmitter chemical, to reward us for seeking out and finding new information.
So getting distracted felt good and helped us stay alive. But the problem is that nowadays, predators aren't much of an issue, but we still have the same brains. And also, there's the internet, which is...
It's an incredibly information-rich environment that the net creates for us, and that's why we use it so much. I mean, sounds, pictures, words, text. And what this tends to do is promote a sort of compulsive behavior, in which we're constantly checking our smartphone, constantly glancing at our email inbox. We're kind of living in this perpetual state of distraction and interruption.
Which is dangerous, because...
That mode of thinking crowds out the more contemplative, calmer modes of thinking.
And that focused, calm thinking is actually how we learn. It's a process called memory consolidation.
And that means the transfer of information from our short-term working memory to our long-term memory. And it's through moving information from your working memory to your long-term memory that you create connections between that information and everything else you know.
So you've got this awesome life-changing piece of information in your short-term memory, but then you hear that email ding and poof, there it goes. That email takes its place and you never get a chance to learn anything, all because of one distraction.
So attention is the key, and if we lose control of our attention or are constantly dividing our attention, then we don't really enjoy that consolidation process.
But I can hear it now. Someone out there is saying, what does learning matter if all the information in the world is just a Google search away? Well...
That is kind of shortchanging our intellects. If that's the way you're using your mind, just kind of searching very quickly and finding information and then forgetting it very quickly, you're never building knowledge. You're simply, you're kind of thinking like a computer.
Which means that our very humanity is at stake. And it would be a shame if we all got assimilated because, well, humanity is pretty neat.
I really believe that if you look at the great monuments of culture, they come from people who are able to pay attention, who control their mind. That's what allows us to think in the highest terms, and think conceptually, think critically, think in some very creative ways.
And it's this kind of thinking that's at risk, being eroded one cute cat video at a time. Don't get us wrong, the internet is good for lots of things, and it should be celebrated. But the best thing we can do for our minds is to find some time every day to unplug, calm down, and focus on one thing at a time. Your email and those cats will be here when you get back.
So what it's basically saying is there is real effects that are happening by the way that we're searching the internet. We're actually becoming what they call surface skimmers. Many of us before the internet, I remember the days before the internet, you would have to read a whole book and you could stay with that whole book and read it. But now it's like you read the headlines and you just skim over information. And we're not putting that information in our deep, long-term memory. So this is kind of a problem that's beginning to emerge with all this use of technology. Social media being only one aspect of our use of the internet. And so there's now starting to be some research that is really starting to say, hey, look, this stuff is really starting to change the way that we think.
So Social media is a fascinating new human phenomenon. And when we look at it deeply from a brain point of view, when we start with the foundation that the brain is actually the social organ of the body, we can understand why social media and brain functions would go hand in hand. That is, the reason social media took off in this last 10 years is because the brain is social and people really want to connect with each other. And then once social media was designed and keeps on creating itself, then the social media, in fact, is going to be shaping the brain so that the brain is responsive to culture. And in one of our research centers at UCLA, what we're able to show is that cultural experiences, that is, messages sent out in society that are mediated through communication, either one-on-one or mass media communication, actually shape the actual structure of the brain. And so it's a two-way street. The brain created social media, and social media shapes the brain.
So here's kind of what he's getting at here. We are social creatures. God created us to be social. That's why when he created Adam, he said, you know what, it's not good for Adam to be alone. He created us to be social. So this is an exploitation of our very basic need to be social together. But what they're finding is that what has happening is messages that go out into society as a culture are now starting to change individual brains. Meaning, whatever goes through society shapes people's individual brains. And that's what they're finding. The more people like something, the more everybody gets on board with that. The reason I'm showing you this is I want to show you God has a very specific plan for us as Christians in these end times. And the devil is very smart. He's moving everybody together in one direction. Here's something that's really interesting. This is a former Facebook president. He was working with Facebook, and he decided to stop working with Facebook because he believes it's actually ruining society. So here he's going to talk a little bit about it.
I had these people who would come up to me, and they would say, you know, I'm not on social media. And I would say, okay, you know, you will be. And then they would say, no, I value my real life interactions. I value the moment. I value presence, and I value intimacy. And I would say, well, you're a conscientious objector. That's okay. You don't have to participate, but you know, we'll get you eventually. and like, I don't know if I really understood the consequences of what I was saying. Because the unintended consequences of a network when it grows to 1 billion or 2 billion people, and it literally changes your relationship with society, with each other, with you know, it probably interferes with productivity in weird ways. It, God only knows what it's doing to our children's brains. You know, if the thought process that went into building these applications, Facebook being the first of them to really understand it, that thought process was all about how do we consume as much of your time and conscious attention as possible. And that means that we need to sort of give you a little dopamine hit every once in a while because someone liked or commented on a photo or a post or whatever. And that's going to get you to contribute more content. And that's going to get you, you know, more likes and comments. I mean, it's a social validation feedback loop that it's like a, I mean, it's exactly the kind of thing that a hacker like myself would come up with because you're.
So they designed social media and Facebook to be what they call a social media validation loop. When you get a like on something, your brain releases dopamine and you get pleasure out of that. Somebody liked what I said, or somebody liked my post, which contributes you to watch it more. And they developed it to be addictive so that you will spend as much time on that device as humanly possible. Because what then they can do is they can go to the advertisers and sell the advertisers money. So this is how they did it. So social media, when they started doing studies about this effect, they wanted to see if somebody was posting something, would it have an effect on everybody else? So they did a test. They took some teenagers and they did a study putting the teenagers in an fMRI machine, and they studied how they reacted to Instagram. And what they found out was they created a fake Instagram together. I'll show you. They put the kids in an fMRI machine to study their brains, and they made a fake Instagram picture where it was basically the exact same picture. There's nothing different between these two pictures. The only thing that they changed was how many likes each picture had. And they wanted to study, would you be influenced based on how many likes a picture had? They found time and time again that people were 100% more likely to choose the photo with more likes than the one without the likes. Therefore, whatever society is doing and everybody likes together, it affects the whole bunch. So this is what they found out in their study. They said as a part of the experiment, they showed neutral photos, things like food and friends, and then they showed risky photos with cigarettes and alcohol. And they showed, they wanted to know, was there an impact based on the type of things that were shown? And they found time and time again that people were influenced with things like alcohol and cigarettes simply because people liked the photos. And when you look at the photos of your friends or people you know, you see people post things all the time that you shouldn't post. Here's a few interesting statistics about Facebook. Facebook adds about 500 new users every single day, 6 new profiles every single second. There's a new person signing up on Facebook. 72% of all of online U.S. adults have Facebook, and they check it at least once a month. The average number of friends that people have is 338, and a medium of 200. So most people have 200 friends. Do you really have 200 friends? Really? Can you possibly communicate with 200 people and keep a friendship going? How many friends do you think the average person really has? How many friends do you think the average person really has? Have you heard of a Gallup study? These are surveys that go out into society and they study various different aspects of society. The Gallup did a study in 1990 to 2001, and they found that the average person would claim about 10 friends. That means that if someone got a divorce, or if somebody had a car accident, or somebody was sick, they could count on at least 10 people who would intimately come into their life and be their close friends. That's what this study revealed. Now, when was social media invented? Do you remember? It was in the 2000s. So this is before social media is invented, right? They just did this study recently, and they found that only 4 friends do people have in the world today. What's happening is we think we're being more connected. We think we're having all of this social interaction, but you know what's really happening? We're becoming more and more isolated from each other. You know what Mrs. White says? There is so much sermonizing going on. There's too many sermons. We have way too many sermons in the world. Do you know how to really reach somebody? She said there needs to be more heart-to-heart work in the labor of souls. There needs to be friendships that are built together, and I find it very interesting to me that we just look at the studies that are happening, and as the technology increases, our love for each other is waxing cold. Do you find that interesting? Because in Matthew 24:12, it says that iniquity shall abound and the love of cold, or the love of many shall wax cold. And what did we read in James 3:16? That wherever selfishness abounds, evil of all manners comes in. And here in our world today, this is exactly what we're seeing. You know, there's lots of celebrities who don't even let their kids watch TV. They won't even let their kids have social media. They won't even let their kids. The very person that invented the iPhone, okay, did not let his children play with the iPhone or the iPad. Bill Gates, who owns one of the largest computer companies in the world, sent his kids to a school with no media whatsoever. These are the people that are in control of creating this stuff, and they don't even use it. Listen to what Denzel Washington says.
Turn it off. That's what I would say. It's hard for young people now because they're hooked. They're addicted. If you don't think you're addicted, and I'm talking about anyone, from the highest to the lowest, if you don't think you're addicted, then see if you can turn it off for a week. It got quiet in here, didn't it? Didn't it get real quiet? It's a tool, so we should use it. God has blessed us with free will. Now it's free will magnified, free will on steroids. You're free to go in any direction you want. It will allow you, and it's not the enemy. It's just a reflection of our own free will. You know? And we all want to be liked, but now we want to be liked by 16 million. And will now some of us do anything to be liked? We used to do anything to be liked, but it was by the person in front of you. Now it's to be liked by 16 million people that you don't know.
So there's a lot of people. Here's the one that talks about Steve Jobs and Bill Gates limiting the technology and sending their kids to schools without any of the technology. This is a huge problem. But if you really examine the reality of how people even use Instagram and these tools where we're looking at what everybody else is doing, they're not even putting a realistic vision of themselves out. They put only their best self forward. This video here, I'm going to turn off the volume to it so I can talk to you over it. But this video here kind of relays a little bit about how people use social media. Here is a person that put on some makeup and took a picture of herself and wanted to show this is how she woke up. But it's not how she woke up. She actually probably took lots of pictures and then put that out there. And then here's a guy who's going to go for a run, but he drives his car to the place where he gets out and wants to take a picture, and that's what he's posting. So he talks about going mountain biking. Here's another girl that finds the picture. She finds it very interesting. She likes it. Then she organizes her desk, and she takes a picture of her desk, and it's a really nice, organized-looking picture, but it isn't how her desk really looks at all. This is the reality of how people are really using social media. If you really spend time with people, you have no idea how many photos, how many pictures they actually take to show you their best self. He didn't even like the drink, but he puts it out there that he likes it. I want to show you something. This was a baseball game. And this was on the news. So as the newscasters were showing some of the people in the crowd, they're looking at some of the girls. Listen to what they're saying.
With the hashtag of the whole thing, AZ Dana Strong fan. And you might see your fan photo at a Diamondback TV broadcast brought to you by T-Mobile. I mean, look at the one on the right.
Do you have to make faces when you take selfies?
Wait, one more now.
Oh, there you go.
Better angle. Oh, check it. Did that come out okay?
That's the best one of the 300 pictures I've taken of myself today.
Every girl in the picture is locked into her phone.
Oh, Lord.
Every single one is dialed in. Welcome to parenting in 2015. They're all just completely transfixed by the technology. David Peralta. Oh, hold on. I'd take a selfie with the hot dog. Selfie with the churro. Selfie just of...
So this goes on and on and on, and the newscasters keep cutting back to them because they're just dumbfounded with, these girls aren't even watching the baseball game. They're so locked into their technology that they can't even see the friends that are around them because they're so fixed on this. This is a problem, right? How many of you young people have been to a party like this? I mean, this party's going off. This is a happening party, right? How many times have you been in a group setting where they're so locked into their phones, they're not even talking to each other? My wife and I go out on dates every once in a while, and I'm always curious to observe people on dates. And I've noticed this time and time again. There's people that go out on dates that don't even talk to each other. How many kids do you know like this? No! Time Magazine says, help, my parents are millennials. What am I going to do? There's a solution. I found this interesting, funny little commercial that talks about this. You know, there are some things that you can begin to do to help with the technology problem in your home. Here is one solution.
Okay, guys, time for dinner.
Come help set the table.
True this is? I have a rule in our house. No technology at the dinner table. I will set my phone down. I don't care how many times it rings. That is a very special time to my family. I have been in too many places with too many homes where I've eaten with people on even Sabbath afternoons and all the kids are doing is on their phone the entire time. Didn't say a word. Brothers and sisters, this is the world that we live in, and we need to connect. Here is this quote, I kind of quoted it from you from Gospel Workers. In the work of ministers, there is too much sermonizing and too little heart-to-heart work. There needs to be more personal labor for souls and Christ-like sympathy to minister to them. They should come close to men individually and seek to awaken their interest in eternal things. Their hearts may be as the beaten highway, and apparently it may be a useless effort to present the Savior to them, but while logic may fail to move and argument powerless to convince, the love of Christ revealed in personal ministry may soften the heart so that the seed of truth can take root. You know, the strongest way to win someone's heart is to have a relationship with them. You need to build that relationship. It's not just, let me share the truth with you and that's it. I'm only going to show up and just present the truth to you. Why do you think Jesus was always healing people and ministering to them? He was reaching their hearts and he was getting to know men. There's a solution. When you go out to a restaurant, young people, I was out in a restaurant recently with my wife, and I saw a group of college kids come into the restaurant. And they all sat down at the table, and every single one of them was so on their phones that they didn't interact with each other. And so I heard this solution. I thought this was brilliant. If you're in a group setting, why not everybody take their cell phone out on the table, and the first one to answer the cell phone has to pay the bill? You better bet you want to answer that text message, right? It's going to cost you. There's solutions. We all have this thing called an airplane mode. I can't tell you how many churches I've been in, and we can see, the speaker can see, the pastor can see, people that are just tuned out playing on your phone. You know what? When you come to church, put the technology down. Bring a Bible. Now, I realize some people like to read their Bible off of their phone, and that's just fine. You can do that. But you know what? Don't be distracted, because God may have a message for you that you have a tiny little window out of the week to hear that message. Learn to turn your phone off, your technology off, and listen to the blessing that God has given. You know, I don't want you to leave here thinking all technology is of the devil and it's bad. Listen to this. You can use the technology as a ministry. I work in ministry work. It is hard, brothers and sisters. I can't tell you how many tears I have cried. I have almost given up. I have been discouraged, depressed, you name it. It is the hardest work I have ever done in my entire life. And I have a brother who also is a speaker, and he runs around and gives messages in churches, and he is always battling depression, always battling discouragement. And one day he couldn't even pay his car payment, he couldn't pay his rent, and he was pushing a cart in the grocery store, and he couldn't even buy food because he had no money. And he's sitting there going, "Why, God, I'm serving you and I have nothing." And all of a sudden his phone gets a text message, and somebody sends him a text message and says, "Hey man, I was thinking about you. I just came across this Bible verse, and I thought you might want to hear it." And that was it. And it was exactly what my friend needed to hear. Brothers and sisters, that's a ministry. You know, you sit in church, and you know who's here and who's not here. You know what? Have you texted people that you don't see in church and just say, "Hey man, I'm thinking about you. I didn't see you in church this weekend. Everything okay?" That's a ministry. That's using the technology to be others focused. You see, the problem necessarily isn't always 100% the technology. It's how we use it. The TV in and of itself is not evil. If it was, God would not bless 3ABN. He would not bless Hope Channel. He would not bless these things that he has clearly won people over to the gospel. But you know what? A lot of people play a lot of evil things on TV. The phone can be a blessing and it can be a curse. Use it as a ministry. I also love technology. I'm quite obsessed with technology. I'm Apple everything. I often have too many Apple devices. I would love an Apple iWatch. In fact, I've tried to convince my wife many times. I've used every angle in the book. I swear I will be able to follow through on my commitments if I have this. And oh, she's just nope, 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 nope. But I want to share something with you. Have you ever been talking to somebody that has technology on their arm or like this, and they're doing this the whole time that you're talking to them? Have you noticed this? They're getting a text message and they're looking like this. And what does that psychologically make you feel? Oh, you must have somewhere else to go. Maybe my conversation is not as important. I don't think people are being knowingly rude, but it is something that you need to be conscientious of, that when you talk to people, you don't have to always be ding, 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 paying attention and ejecting out of the conversation. Be conscientious of that if you have all of these technology things. YouTube is an interesting thing. It says 13-year-olds to 24-year-olds, pretty much all they watch is YouTube. They don't even watch TV. You want to reach a young person in the demographic of 13 to 18, they don't even watch anything other than YouTube. That's the statistics of what's out there in the world today. So here's some facts about YouTube that I think you'll find is kind of somewhat interesting. 300 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube every single minute. To give you a perspective of how much video content that is, the top three production companies, CBS, ABC, and NBC. It took them 60 years worth of content to what every 60 days YouTube uploads. Every 60 days. They're making as much content as those top three in 60 years. That's an incredible amount of information that is at our fingertips, right? 3.25 billion hours of video are watched every single month. The average viewing is 40 minutes. And the way YouTube works is you go on there to try to watch a little 5-minute video, and then 2 hours later, you've watched a bunch of other ones, right? Anybody experienced that? But YouTube is a wonderful tool to learn something. I've learned to change my brakes on YouTube. I've learned to do things that I would have never been able to do, and I've learned how to watch somebody else do the example and do it. So there is a positive use to the technology, but I'll tell you what do you think most people watch YouTube? What's the number one most watched thing on YouTube, do you know? No, this is actually a little old of a thing. The number one most watched video is like Despacito and another one, right? It's a music video. But I want to show you something. If you go and you look on the list, look at all of the top videos that are out there. This was a few years ago. Number one used to be Gangnam Style, okay? And then look at this. Justin Bieber, Taylor Swift, Justin Bieber, Katy Perry, Maroon 5, Katy Perry, OnePublic, Justin Bieber, and Shakira. What is everybody watching? Oh, that's interesting, isn't it? Because you see, remember when the olden days when people would be like, don't watch MTV? MTV's full of bad stuff. Don't watch MTV. Guess what, brothers and sisters? People are still watching MTV. It's just not called MTV. It's called YouTube. How many of you have ever seen a music video or clicked on that little link, right? Just curious. So be aware of that. YouTube can be a wonderful tool, but it also can be a dangerous tool. We talked about this time issue that we all experience. Ephesians 5:5-17 says, "See then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as the wise, redeeming the time. Because the days are evil, therefore do not be unwise, but understand what the will of the Lord is." Listen to this, testimonies to the church. This is really interesting. Success or failure in ministry depends much on one's use of time. Some might now have been thorough workmen as they would have made a good use of their time, feeling that they would have to give account to God for their misspent moments. They have displeased God because they have not been industrious. Self-gratification, self-love, selfish love, and ease have kept them from some good when withheld them from obtaining the knowledge of the scriptures, that they might be thoroughly furnished unto all good works. Some do not appreciate the value of time, and they have idled away in bed the hours that might have been employed in the study of the Bible. I want to be 100% honest with you. I have laid in bed and noticed, playing with my phone, you know what? I haven't said anything to my wife in an hour. How many of you have actually been in that same position where it's like you don't even lay in bed next to your mate and have a conversation? We're so locked in to the technology. As the world is entering into its final moments, you know what? We are to reflect the love of God to everyone around us. Relationships are an important part of our life and sharing and interacting with each other. Be careful of these devices that we think are improving our life, but what they're really doing is tearing our relationships apart. Be careful of that, and be careful of the time that you spend on that. It's impossible to believe that you can come to church only 1 hour out of the week. That's it, 1 hour. And that's your religious experience. And then the rest of the week is spent on yourself, spent on your own media habits, spent on whatever it is that you want to do. Brothers and sisters, we need to spend time with God. Titus 1:16 says, "They profess that they know God, but in their works they deny him." Let your works prove that you have a love for God. Listen to this Review and Herald quote. The great outpouring of the Spirit of God, which lightens the whole earth with His glory, will not come until we have an enlightened people that will be by experience, or know by experience what it means to be laborers together with God. When we have an entire, wholehearted, consecrated consecration to the service of Christ, God will recognize the fact by the outpouring of His Spirit without measure. But this will not be while the largest portion of the church are not laborers together with God. God cannot outpour out His Spirit when selfishness and self-indulgence are so manifest. When a spirit prevails that, if put into words, would express that answer of Cain, am I my brother's keeper? Brothers and sisters, I long for the outpouring of the Holy Spirit. I long for that final rush of God's work. But you know what? When I read Mrs. White's writings, when I read the Bible, God is wanting us to work with Him to share His love with the world. The world is becoming colder and colder and more selfish than ever before. Be remade new. Titus 3, 5 through 7. I leave you with this. Not by works of righteousness which we have done, but according to His mercy He has saved us, through the washing and regeneration and renewing of the Holy Spirit, whom He poured out on us abundantly through Jesus Christ our Savior, that having been justified by His grace, we should become heirs according to the hope of eternal life. You know, I hope and pray that it is your will, that the Holy Spirit will be so poured out onto you and this church, that when people say, I know a Seventh-day Adventist that lives next to me or works with me or goes to my school or is in my community, when they say that, they should say, that is the most loving person I know. Because that is what Jesus was.